Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this week's episode. And thank you to everyone who is a patron member, a Patreon member at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Your help over there shows that we can do this thing and keep it going. And, of course, that support actually allows this show to keep going and pay for our growing costs. Everything that you contribute over at patreon.com/majorspoilers goes right back into this show, and everything that we do at Major Spoilers pays for our growing costs and encourages us to make more of these episodes for you week after week after week for, what, 8 years now? Something like that?
We're getting there.
We are getting there indeed. Hey, look, there's Rob.
Hi.
And then there's D&D Brian.
Hello.
Sam is joining us again this week. Always happy to have Sam here.
Hello.
And here's Matthew.
Hey, what do you know? What do you say?
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, our DM is here.
I am.
Oh, thank goodness Rodrigo is here this week, because otherwise this would be a really, really, really short episode.
Or a weird one.
Or a weird one.
We all wake up in a tavern, and we have French accents.
We.
What do you mean, we?
Hello, I'm very French, no? Okay, Rodrigo, what are happening?
Was that French or...
I don't know. It all turns Scottish in the end.
I don't know if it was even Scottish.
Everything turns Scottish in the end, Stephen. That's the one important rule of it.
Things
all.
Certainly turns into a sheep's intestine baked into a pie.
Yes. Texas Dracula.
Rodrigo, where should we go this week? We kind of had a couple of very dramatic moments.
We did.
Oh yeah, lots of reveals, lots of big moments in the last couple of episodes that people are still talking about today.
To this very day, we
well, and even
imagine.
The future people are still talking about this episode. Hello, right? Future person that just discovered this episode and is like, "Whoa, they're talking to me, man."
There's a man named James in the year 2020 who is listening to this episode.
Right. Hopefully he's a Patreon member.
If you're not, James, you need to become a patron because I can see you.
Because if you aren't, you're probably not able to access this episode too easily. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Rodrigo, where were we?
Where were we?
We were hanging out with Queen's Rebellious daughter and her
compatriots.
Yeah.
We have formed a league of some sort.
A league of extraordinary gentlemen and women.
Yes. Heard a story.
We heard several stories, yes.
The Sagacious Orbit Pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest names ever. And Rodrigo hates it because I can't remember the other girl's name, and all I can think of is the French lieutenant's woman, and I know that's wrong.
Eldest century?
Thank you.
Nope.
No.
Oh. Fourth oldest inspector.
There Fourth oldest inspector.
Thank you, Stephen, for getting me out of trouble.
Everybody gets a slight pass on these names because they are specifically verbose. Not that you guys have met the specifically verbose elocutor, but we'll get to that later.
We learned all about Azamar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the megaliths.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rakshashe, is that their name?
And the Deva. Rakshasi.
It's been good times, man.
A little terrifying, to be honest.
It has. Now, do you guys remember where you're heading?
Yeah, we're going to head into the mountains to try to rendezvous with the mountain elves to get a guide to the Salamander Coil's secret base.
Where hopefully they're keeping Lek, or we can intercept them on the way to them taking Lek there.
I believe the interception was the plan, hopefully.
And hopefully in the process, not bringing down the great weapon that will destroy this entire plane of existence.
I don't know if it was the plane of existence. It was a large portion of
general continent.
A large swath of the continent.
Yeah, let's put it this way. You know how the dinosaurs were wiped out?
Too much.
That's what we're trying to prevent.
How much will it wipe out? Too much.
Any place that we are is too much.
All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week for a mailbag.
Yep. This was a clip show.
And not even a particularly good one at that.
No,
you just
like edit
in all the
one.
Clips of the audio. 12-minute episode.
All right. You know, so, I believe last time
on Critical Hit.
We had made camp.
Mm-hmm.
So, the next morning, people get up and get ready to go.
Okay.
I was already up.
Yes. Orym was already up. So, why don't you give us a description of Orym?
Orym is an Eladrin. You don't see too many of those around these parts. But he's still keeping it disguised with his ears tucked under his hat. He's got on some beautiful blue robes and these big orbish eyes that are always apparently looking right at the camera because he doesn't have pupils and you can't see exactly where he's looking. But
yeah, worse still, you can see the camera reflected on them. It's a pain in the butt to edit out.
I know, right? We have to paint every individual frame. So that's Orym. He's an Eladrin wizard, and he's everything you expect an Eladrin would be, and then some.
Hair color?
Blonde.
Obvious weapons?
You won't notice them until they kill you. No, he's got a sword that he keeps by his side. It's a sentient sword, and it is. Sometimes we'll talk to him. And others, if he so chooses.
Right. Okay. So, who wants to go next in the description times?
I think Ket is waking up. Hello, Ket.
All right. What's Ket look like?
Ket is a half elf, moderately tall, wearing a black leather suit. Brown hair, brown goatee, cut close. He's got a backpack with him that occasionally shifts like something's alive inside of it, mm-hmm. And a big stick.
Okay. Who's next?
Little Sparkle is at Kenku, which, unlike Eladrin, is pretty common in these parts, being she's a bird person with a mix of green and black feathers. Feathers kind of stick up in the back of her head to resemble spiky hair. And she wears black leather armor and matching boots and carries a dagger that has a kind of scorpion-shaped hilt. And she has a long green beak and green eyes.
Cool. Next.
Randis is a human, more or less, with a little shorter than average, some fairly unruly hair, got a big metal robot arm, and knowing that he's going to be doing a lot of hiking and trudging recently, he's wearing this dark tan brown poncho and very sturdy boots he's got from the last time we went and met these mountain elves. He's got a little robot spider crab looking thing helping him sort things out and get him fastened down into his mini pouches and stuff all over Bandolier, loading up clips for his big fancy repeating crossbow and just getting all sorts of vials and whatnot ready to go as they're getting ready to head out.
Nice. And?
Hello! Sakaar is a human so long as you can't beat a +5 bluff check. He's 6'5", broad of limb. Brownish skin, black hair. His hair is black, and he has black hair.
Okay.
Currently unarmored, although he occasionally does have the kind of a cool red hide armor that he wears. Likewise, dressed for travel. Carries a pair of matched swords, one large scimitar, one small one that has a tendency to burst into flame. I believe he has cool sideburns.
Sure.
And he tries not to just cross his arms and look like a douche all the time.
Yeah. Working on other things like putting hands on hips.
Right. Or, you know, maybe just leaning on something insouciantly or putting up a boot like Commander Riker.
Scratching his chin thoughtfully.
Exactly. Different sorts of things. Maybe just raising an eyebrow like Dwayne Johnson. All of these things could be in the general vicinity.
Okay.
Also, I don't know if I mentioned, but his hair is black.
Gotcha. Okay. Black hair.
Yeah.
Is that because he colors it?
This would go gray for me.
No, Stephen, it's not.
Oh, okay.
You've met his mother. She also has black hair.
Does she now? All right.
Mm-hmm.
She's also a vampire.
What?
No mothers. What did I tell you, Sam? No mothers.
You didn't tell me anything about that.
I said no mothers. That's my rule of signing on to every show. No mothers.
It's a very new rule to me.
Welcome to Critical Hit. My name's Matthew. No mothers.
All right. So those are the guys.
Hello.
Hi.
You all are waking up or in the process of getting ready, rather. Along with you is Big Teach, who is a very large minotaur, which means he's a humanoid type creature with the head and hooves of a bovine type creature, large horns, dreadlocks. He's kind of a black and brown color, wears hide armor nowadays. And has a big staff, has a belt with some pouches with some herbs kind of poking out, some of them. Also, Tekiotl, who is a Kenku-like little sparkle. And in interacting with him, you guys really see that little sparkle, or rather Kenku in general, can be very expressive. Their feathers do a lot when they're talking. Anytime he's surprised, his like feathers tend to stand on end. When he seems to be upset about something, they kind of flatten out on his face. And when he's like happy or proud, he kind of puffs up, which goes to show that little sparkle really keeps it under control a lot of the time. She's not necessarily terribly emotive, although you've spent enough time with her, especially when she cracks up, that her feathers kind of get all over the place. He is not dressed for this, but enough people around have lent him some clothes that don't fit him particularly well, but he's managed to cobble together essentially a traveler's outfit, all kind of punctuated with a big trench coat that, again, just kind of like, you know, basically just his fingers poke out of the sleeves. But now he's wearing a backpack, which helps to kind of keep it all in place rather than it just like shifting around. Like the straps of the backpack are doing a lot of the work. Also with you is a small rat. It looks like a little rat. Also with you are three, as you now know, Deva. One of them, the Queen's Rebellious Daughter, is a young humanoid woman. They have grayish skin. She has a pair of marks about, like, on her eyes, essentially, like basically a rectangle that goes from crosses through her eyes down to her cheek, and then essentially comes back up over her temple, and she has one on each side, basically crossing her eyes. which are these kind of silvery orbs. She's got a long hair and a ponytail and wears a very adventurous looking outfit. Mostly like a leather jacket, a long leather jacket over some good leather kind of vest and pants combo with some pretty nice boots. Someone along with her, someone who is not also not apparently dressed for this, but doesn't seem to be having any problems. The which oldest inspector?
Fourth.
That is correct.
We win.
Yeah, good job. 2 XP for everybody.
Woo!
Yay!
Who is dressed to the nines, long sleeve, pressed shirt, bow tie, black vest, spats, and is carrying a black umbrella. She has a very short, kind of a, not necessarily a pixie cut, but very short hair that with bangs that come down and cover one of her eyes a lot of the time. Her markings are two kind of like blush-looking ones, just perfect circles on her cheeks. And she looks like she's not having any of this, but she's going along with it. Along with her is a another one of these creatures. He has two triangular marks, one below one of his eyes and then the other one on his chin. He is a large, portly man. Anybody remember his name?
The Sagacious Orbit Pioneer.
That is correct.
I remembered that one. That's a really cool name.
Oh, thanks. He is wearing some comfortable-looking robes, which protrude past his arms, or the sleeves do, unless he needs to do something, at which point he can like roll them back. And right now, he is also wearing this very obvious bright yellow turban, which you hadn't seen before. Apparently, as he's getting ready, he put this on.
Oh, wow, and, that is a very bright turban.
Oh, you like my turban? It is my traveling turban.
It's very nice. And then I lean over to Kit. I don't want to walk near him. Fair.
So that is the small army of NPCs that are here with you.
Yay.
Yay. NPC army.
They are the best.
Yes.
And
especially the were-rat.
Yeah, definitely.
Maba'a.
That's right. Maba'a the were-rat.
See, I remember things.
Yeah, no, good job. So there you guys are.
Ready to head out then?
I believe so.
Did we already send a sending to the mountain elves to let them know that we're coming?
I believe we did.
You did, yes.
If you scroll back up.
Yep, you are already on your way to a rendezvous, and the were-rats know about it.
Yep.
Were-rats know everything.
So I think we just gather up our things and start heading in the direction we need to head.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's right. You remember what the rendezvous point is called?
I don't. Let me look here. Bloodletters Pass.
That is correct.
That's where we are heading.
All right. So you all start traveling. According to Teach, it's going to take a couple of days, assuming that everybody's hustling, to get there.
Okay.
We should hustle then.
I agree.
How many people are in our party?
Like at this 10, point? Right?
I think 11.
So let's see. There's there's 7 truants, mm-hmm. 3 Deva, and 1 were rat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how many is that?
That's 11.
Yeah.
So quite a bit of us. Who's the slowest?
Yeah.
The were-rat. Well, the were-rat's riding on someone.
Yeah, the were-rat can ride on whoever. Yeah, and
the were-rat can ride on Sakaar. Probably.
Yeah.
Mm.
So the slowest is probably Tekiotl, but he actually seems to be doing all right. Okay. He's a fit young man. And, you know, he's trying very hard to not be a burden.
So what's the landscape? Are we way up in the mountains already? Is this rugged mountain path stuff? Are we climbing vertically?
It's rugged, but it's slightly different. This is all very mossy. And sometimes as you continue to trek, you find that the mountain is very slick. Right now, you're basically sticking to actual passes. So it's not a big deal. You're not doing a lot of climbing. But this appears to be, you would imagine the, essentially where the rain shadow starts, like, you know, to the other side of the mountains. Like, this is about as far as the rain gets, and it all kind of trickles down here. In fact, sometimes as you're traveling farther down, you can see actual waterfalls. Just as reservoirs get filled, the mountain is very porous. So there's just all these like little holes. It's also rounder than a lot of the other parts of the mountain that you've been to, where essentially, rather than big jagged peaks, it's just kind of these sloping hills full of little holes.
Okay.
The mountain is mostly black stone, but every once in a while you will just cross into another section where it's just kind of this like gray stone that is very easily stained by moss. So actually, weirdly, every once in a while, especially as you dip down onto a kind of more of a valley, the rocks basically turn green.
Oh, neat. Do they have like the kind of moss waterfalls where there's just like where water was, now there's just moss?
Yeah. I mean, there's, you sometimes walk through a pass and you can tell that this pass gets flooded regularly.
Nice.
Like there's just not even just moss around where you would expect, but like a clear water line. Either by moss or by, you know, holes becoming more prominent.
And when you say green rocks, does that mean because they're covered with lichen and moss, or because this is copper that has copper ore in the material?
We're agreed.
Yeah, this is mostly because moss is so prevalent here. But Vorim wants to take a few samples.
Vorim doesn't really care, but I thought maybe the sure. The audience might.
Right. No. This appears to be just because moss is very common here. You guys do manage to pick a particularly dry day from the looks of things. There's a lot of dew collected in the mossy areas, but nothing to, there's no actual rain falling right now.
Kat, looks like you have something to say.
Just thinking ahead.
What are you thinking?
Figure out what exactly we're going to be doing. Planning for contingencies.
Okay.
Having plans would be good.
Speaking of contingencies, Sakaar, could you just stay on the lookout? The fact is that if rain comes suddenly, this trail will flood, and we're going to need to be able to get to somewhere with higher ground quickly.
Absolutely. Sakaar is on the lookout.
Okay, give me a nature check.
Hey! Something I don't suck at, doodly-doo. Boom, 30.
All right. You're fairly confident it's probably not going to rain in the next few hours.
I'm quite confident that it won't be raining in the next few hours.
Good. Thanks.
Did we show those rock eggs things to the Queen's Rebellious Daughter?
Yeah, she tried walking off with them, but otherwise had no idea what they were.
All right.
But they do affect her as well as...
Right.
And everyone else.
Have they affected everyone?
I don't know. I'm trying to think if everyone has handled them at this point.
Forum touched it. Queen's Rebellious Daughter touched it.
They've affected everyone that's touched them.
Yes.
Regardless of... And
I think we didn't let
Sakaar touch them because we realized that we'd have a hard time actually subduing him if he decided to walk off.
Mm.
But we know that they affect Eladrin, that they affect Kenku, that they affect human.
But do they affect vampire?
Yes.
She says yes.
I think we know where they attracted Kenku. I'm pretty sure we handed them to like a fence that a Kenku.
I think that's right.
Nobody knows what these things are.
No.
Well, they're clearly not important.
Okay.
I think that'll largely be a mystery for another time unless something happens.
You guys.
Yeah, I think the idea is rendezvous with the elves. Hopefully they have some intel on this base, and maybe we can add to it through some scouting and figure out where and when to hit it.
What information did Tekiadl have about the transfer? Did he have anything specific or just...
He knew that they'd been sending materials to the space to basically build a secondary facility in case Lek was trying to sabotage his experiments at the Black Archive. And now they're sending Lek there and that they could be further along at this facility than we wanted them to be.
All right. In narrative... Or in wide narrative terms, does anybody do anything while you're traveling?
I'll try to chat with some of our companions. Sure. You know, see if maybe the Deva are willing to talk a little bit about any of the other vertices now that we all know that they exist and, you know, what they're like.
Okay. So who do you go talk to?
Probably the Queen's Rebellious Daughter, since she seems to be the friendliest.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, so, you watch over this whole world?
Well, what do you mean by world?
This Virtus.
No. The Pioneer is the caseworker for this vertex.
Yeah, then what's your title?
I'm a traveling agent. I go basically anywhere, try to root out any problems, mostly get in trouble in the process.
Oh. So do you get to, have you been to like all the different vertices?
I have.
Oh, wow. So what's your favorite?
My favorite, that's like picking your children, who all have fangs and are constantly trying to eat you. I would say probably my favorite one is, probably the hourglass. It just really keeps things interesting.
What's the hourglass like?
Right now, it's this mostly this enormous tropical jungle of death with several civilizations living on there, most of them trying to kill each other. The ones that know about each other anyway. But let's see, in about, what do you think, in about 300 years maybe, it's going to flip and it'll become something else.
Oh, wait. So what happened? You can travel through time?
No.
Oh.
But it does this roughly every 500 years.
Oh, I see.
Hmm. So when you say flip, like what happens to what's going on there now?
Well, some of it dies, some of it changes. So last 500 years, it was this kind of enormous tundra with, a lot of giant mammalian monsters roaming the icy wastes and things like that. And then it flipped and some of them are still around. The enormous sloths are doing pretty well in the new situation, but some of them die off. Some of the civilizations die off, others adapt. It is a fundamental change every time it happens, like really, really fundamental. So none of the civilizations are aware that anything has ever been different. Their lore sometimes changes, sometimes doesn't. So some of them have these crazy myths about previous things that have happened or previous ages of their world, but it just depends how they're received by who's in power, what their current belief system is, or whatever. Some things go away entirely. I mean, we're talking like oceans and, probably maybe hundreds of thousands of species of plants and animals that just disappear. They don't even have the chance to die off in the new environments. They just go away.
Wow. What causes that?
That's just the way the plane is. It's just nothing really causes the Feywild and the Shadowfell in this plane to bleed into the natural world. That's just the way it is.
Huh. And there's nothing like besides your people to remind them, like no really long-lived races or big monuments?
There are certain things survive and they just really perplex the locals. Some places retain some amount of what has happened before. So, for example, there are pockets of this world that are still very cold, and some architecture there survives. So if enterprising adventurers find them, they find, ancient relics from that time that, as far as they're concerned, never was. Because a lot of the time these civilizations come into being with, complete 1,000-year-old histories or more of the way things have always been.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Actually, there is a standing order that no agent is allowed to be in the hourglass during a change because we don't know what would happen.
Oh, yeah. You could become a giant sloth.
Or disappear entirely. And it's really not a loss in personnel that we're willing to accept.
Wow. So, yeah, I understand your overall mission is to prevent people from moving between the vertices, but like that doesn't seem to happen that often. So
no.
What do you do kind of on a day to day?
Well, mostly root that out. You have to remember that. Well, I'll give you an example. How many continents of this world have you been to?
Two.
Right. They are very far apart and it's very difficult to travel between them. And we usually have one, maybe two agents for an entire vertex. Mm. So we actually spend a lot of time traveling, keeping our ears to the ground. We've just gotten, because the way that the megaliths worked, we can kind of follow trends in the way that civilizations are developing that we can track. But sometimes things like here pop up and surprise us. So it's actually a full-time job. The other thing is, I'm certainly guilty of this myself. Sometimes you just find causes worth getting involved in, and even though we're not supposed to, we just end up doing it anyway. And pretty much everybody does it. So you might, you know, spend, I don't know, anywhere from a week to, I'd say, reasonably 50 years just looking into something.
And then what do you do when you discover someone's trying to move to another vertex?
Usually nobody's trying to move into another vertex on purpose. This is actually a very unusual circumstance. Usually things like that happen by accident, where somebody finds the right set of circumstances. So in that case, we usually just sabotage it. Again, this happens very rarely, but when it does, we have some pretty advanced magic and technology. So if we spot something with enough time, we can usually change it, divert the people that are trying to accomplish whatever it is they're trying to accomplish as accidentally a rail risk. And nobody ever has to know that we were even involved.
A rail risk?
Yeah, the railing is what we call the plan to keep everybody in their own vertex. So every plane has a certain level of rail relevance. Some planes are much more prone to things like this than others because of their nature, and some species are much more dangerous in that sense because they're more likely to find a way. Do you guys remember when you went to Oversight and there were non-Deva working there?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So those are Dreamfolk. They come from the Lovers. Dreamfolk can actually travel to other planes through dreams. So the Lovers has an extreme rail relevance. It actually has two case workers, which if you consider that there's only about 99 of us in Oversight, it actually creates a huge it's a huge allotment allocation of resources to have two people there at all times.
Hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what have been ways that you've stopped other people from actively trying to cross vertexes?
Vertices. And like I said, usually it's something that's happening on accident. So if we get wind that somebody is getting visions from another world, or that somebody has found some strange cave that leads to an undocumented demiplane, we usually investigate it, and it's usually as simple as closing it or convincing the vision haver that that it's nothing, or just essentially our moving them or causing circumstances to take their attention away from whatever it is that's happening.
Hmm. Okay.
This situation is very unusual. Yeah. I mean, getting a signal from a vertex that's not even this close is very unlikely. Hopefully our agents will be able to turn something up soon and we'll know why. But it just seems one of the reasons why we didn't catch this earlier is because this is so unusual. Even when you're talking about a thousands of years old organization and seeing all kinds of weird things, this is very unlikely. Lek is very unique in that sense.
Hmm. Interesting.
So what is the plan regarding Lek and his research for your organization?
Well, if I have my way, we'll probably end up recruiting him. But we'll just have to extract him first before we really know what he intends to do. what he wants and how much he has taught the coil. So at this stage, nothing's really off the table. We're just going to have to play it by ear.
Yeah, I guess the sooner we can get there and throw a wrench into plans, hopefully be more successful than our last attempt.
Well, hopefully. I would imagine, though, that because this is a hidden base, it may have as much security as the Black Archive.
Fourth
it's hard for
inspector.
Anything to have as much security as the Black Archive.
Yeah, the fourth oldest inspector pipes up. That's actually very unlikely. I'm sure they factor the remoteness and secrecy of the location. So if I know my bureaucracies, there's somebody on the top that looked at this and said, well, then we don't have to spend so much on this.
Yep, the Salamander's Coil definitely does care about their resource allocation. So, common, that comes from the monoliths. Is that also why a lot of, I don't know, races that we, between this vertus and the other ones we explored, look kind of alike?
No, not really. That is actually a theory that we've had for a long time, which is that all vertex were one thing at some point, and sentient life has sort of developed along these lines. But all you have to do is a little digging to find that that's not necessarily the case. There are a lot of non-humanoid looking creatures that are sentient in all the vertices. And then once you look into things like, for example, creatures that are able to, there's sort of this like recurring loop in worlds that have deities and or things like deities, in which they tend to take the form of their humanoid inhabitants, and then if they go and create more things, they tend to have that same body type, which then, you know, continues to kind of reinforce that loop. You know, we've encountered places like, well, for here, for example, I mean, we're, our research indicates that Dragonborn were created by dragons. So, the dragons probably looked at the human body frame and said, hey, let's make some guys that are like us and like them at the same time, I guess. We're not entirely sure, but, that seems to be the indication.
Okay.
Same thing with orcs and giants. Giants were, you know, like, hey, we need some guys to do stuff around the house. So they made orcs.
Where Minotaur and Enku come from? Or if that
no
matter,
idea.
Kreen or... No.
No, but actually the Kreen are a weird example. We haven't really had a lot of opportunity to study them, but it's on the docket. The Kreen can do some strange things, and they might not be rail relevant, but they're strange.
Oh, like what?
Well, they manifest a lot of the same abilities as the Dream Folk, so we're a little concerned about it, but the Kreen don't sleep, so... We're not sure exactly what that means.
I had no idea they didn't sleep.
Nope,
that's
they
useful.
Don't.
I wish I didn't have to sleep.
Well, their lives are also a lot shorter. And we think that's related.
That makes sense.
Doesn't explain why he doesn't sleep.
Why who doesn't sleep?
A pointed Aurum.
Oh. No, that's a different reason. It's entirely possible that Eladrin don't sleep because their progenitors were around before sleep was a thing in this vertex.
Even I did not know that.
So do the, like, gods and Elder Fae, do they all come from, like, before the vertices split up, or?
Probably not. At least not the ones that you know today. From what we know of the Feywild, it's constantly changing, but there's some through line to when these things were very young. No deities in any of these vertices seem to be immediately aware of the other vertices. So, generally speaking, we assume that any gods or elder beings or daemons or any other thing like that appears is usually more recent than, you know, the potential initial event that created the vertices.
Do you have any theories on what that event was?
There are, but we have very few times to really convene as a group and swap theories nowadays. So they've really taken a backseat to our current job. You know, it's anything from just a natural event to some other type of war or anything like that. I think there's this idea that a lot of our agents and oversight have that thinks that if the Asimar could achieve what they did, then some progenitor species would have had so much more potential, right? If they were in some way fractured or in some way echoed in what happened afterwards, then some sort of like initial civilization would have had to be great. But that's all conjecture. You know, we've seen great civilizations rise basically from the dirt. And we've also seen terrible civilizations developed because a, you know, fairly sound group of people who were just doing their thing and farming or hunting or whatever they were doing would just kind of go astray a little bit and everything decays, even if it's successful as a society in the war and economy sense. So, you know, I don't really have a pet theory for that.
Certainly a lot to take in.
Oh, I'm sure.
And does everyone agree with your theories, or are there other theories that...
Which theory are you referring to?
Just, I mean, they're all very interesting, but I was curious if other people had conflicting theories that you maybe don't agree with, or...
Well, everyone in the organization, if they weren't a... somewhat unhinged iconoclast to begin with, then thousands of years of doing this job has essentially turned them into one. So, yep, everybody has different theories. There's something any given agent thinks that another agent doesn't agree with. But generally speaking, we all agree on the end goal, which is to keep the railing intact and just let the vertices, histories, and people play out in their own way. Which is also why, as I'm sure some of you might have thought, we tend to not get involved even in things that seem cataclysmic in these vertices. First off, there aren't that many of us, and second, we can't spend all of our time diving into wars, even if it's something like your Celestial Crusade. Because, you know, it's your history, and generally speaking, you should play it out.
I suppose so.
Well, I'm curious. Those are some big, grand scope ideas and thoughts. What are your thoughts on something smaller, like how we're going to get to Lek or take out the coil, or I don't know, preferably not destroy the continent.
Yeah, that would be my choice as well, to not destroy the continent. As far as getting to Lek, we'll just have to see when we get there. I mean, we don't have a lot of information about whatever this facility is. But I'm sure we can formulate a plan on the fly. As far as the coil, our involvement is mostly going to be to make sure that these plans and technologies go away, which probably, for the sake of people in this continent, will have a secondary effect of destabilizing the coil in some way. But our goal is not to defeat the Salamander's coil. They are in a lot of ways, a temporary obstacle to us. As soon as they, in some way, lose the ability to travel between vertices, they will no longer be rail relevant, and we will just let things play out. Now, reasonable. If we get there and see them and study the situation and determine that this goes to the very top, or that the organization absolutely needs to be dismantled, then we'll get involved with that. But chances are that's not the case from what we've seen of their operations. They tend to compartmentalize pretty severely.
Yeah, I mean, considering that this whole case of Lex Project sat on a desk for basically a year.
Yeah.
My guess is that, Pake knows that this is happening, but doesn't know any of the information to go build himself a new interdimensional or intervertes machine if this gets taken down.
That's right. It's very, very difficult to cross vertices, even especially in a vertex like the Bloom, which is so concise. So it's likely that even if some people still know that this is happening, that they will never be able to replicate it, assuming all the proper cogs are removed.
You know, one of the vertices that we visited, and I don't remember which one, we had to go into the big tower, and at the top...
The swarm, yes.
At the top, there was kind of like a big control room, and it looked like they were observing many locations at once, and I don't know if that was other...
Well, they were observing the stars, right?
That's right. The swarm has 20, I want to say, 20 demiplanes, and they all interact with each other in weird ways. So essentially guys like... was it the Sky Talkers that you guys interacted with? That plane is basically all large enough urban centers in that plane develop some sort of clan or organization or religious order or something that looks at those stars, because their interactions cause weird things to happen. Everything from just altering weather patterns to creating, I don't know, rain of molten lead, or causing reptiles to become intelligent and magical. It just depends on the particular star configurations.
Well, I was wondering, besides a feet on the ground approach to monitoring these different vertices and the planes in each vertices, do you have some way of monitoring them at your headquarters?
We do. That's actually what a lot of our Dreamfolk agents take care of. We have sensors in specific places that we think are at risk. So we spend some time planting those and moving them around to make sure that they can be monitored remotely. But we don't have like a way of sensing a dimensional disturbance until it's happened. So no, we can't necessarily see a pooling of energy somewhere, unless we have somebody in that vertex with the proper equipment, which, you know, we all have. But it does require to just have your feet on that particular patch of ground. Not to mention that vertices that have multiple demiplanes, the demiplanes themselves can be a rail risk. So that's why we spent as much time as possible also there, which again kind of spreads us a little thinner, but that's the point of having roving agents, that the Pioneer, for example, doesn't have to just split all of its time between the Moon, the Feywild, and what are the other ones here? The Astral Sea, the Shadowfell.
Mm-hmm.
He can essentially generally monitor them and take small trips to them. And the wandering agents will just come through and spend, again, anywhere from a week to 50 years investigating something in a particular plane, and then just make sure that it's reports all around.
Interesting.
How long do you live?
I don't know. We haven't died yet.
Wow.
Yeah, well, let's just say that in a way we had to die to get into this situation, so it's not necessarily all it's cracked up to be.
Keep that in mind.
Do you enjoy your job?
I do. I mean, but this is the attitude that I've always had. You know, I enjoy traveling. I enjoy meeting new people. I enjoy lording my knowledge over other people. So it's just really perfect.
Mm.
So before all this happened, were you actually the daughter of a queen?
No. No, our titles are arcane constructs. They are what we have to use in place of our names, because our names died so that we could live forever.
So how did you choose them, or how did they get chosen?
They just are. That's what we are.
Huh.
They never accept that answer when I give it.
Well, that's because things work differently for you. But it makes sense. It makes sense to question it. We just don't have a better answer. It's very complex, and it's a process that can't really be duplicated anymore because it involved the energies that were left from the dead vertices. If we wanted to create new us, we couldn't, because there are no more Asimar, the energies are different now, and no other species would be able to jive with it, even if all that wasn't true. Any other questions?
It's just so much to take in. It's hard to, you know, figure out what is the next thing to ask or.
Oh, sure. I mean, just the logistical questions, right? How can you possibly do this if there are so few of you? You know, who oversees the oversight? Well, that's getting into the moral questions, which really are the heavy hitters, right? What right do you have? Who decides what happens, who lives and who dies, and why would you even want to keep the vertices apart? These are all things that we basically ask ourselves constantly, but the consensus between us has always been, or has really fallen into our current modus operandi, if you will. And you might not agree with that, and you might raise those questions, but this is what our organization is now, and we're not free of conflict or doubt. We named ourselves Oversight for a reason.
Well, I personally don't question
whether your decisions are right or wrong, because we go into, as a group, into decisions every day, and we have to make the decisions without someone else telling us whether our decisions were the right choices or the wrong choices. So we kind of have to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you have not ever met anything of a greater power than you?
Oh, certainly. I mean, there's... I couldn't get into fisticuffs with a god. Like, definitely not the gods that you have here.
But they also don't have the power to cross to another vertex, right?
That's right. It just really depends on how you define power. You could argue that the agents of oversight are the most powerful things in the world or in the universe or in the vertices, just because we have that ability that no one else has, except for the dream folk, because we're older and because we have all of these abilities and technologies. But honestly, that doesn't do much when you get ambushed with by a everyday simple owlbear. So... Hmm. You know, it just really depends on how you measure power. Most of the time, we come out ahead because we have a lot of things going for us. We have expertise, we have people, we have resources, and we have the element of surprise because, aside from present company, basically nobody knows we're around. So that's kind of how we get ahead. There's something to be said for a glowing cloud of power sitting in the astral sea shouting at people.
Hmm.
That's the best sum up of divinity I've ever heard.
So, like, do the void beings, do they? Are they in any danger of breaching to other vertices, or do you think they'd have that capability?
It would be very unlikely from what our agent on the moon has told us. They are very tied to each other. Each void creature is a part of some larger void creature, and the largest void creatures are this myriad of beings that then somehow add up together to be this other thing that is entirely different. So they're all very connected. Maybe if there was some way to detach one of the more powerful ones, they would, but right now they're so tied to the moon and their realm, they can barely exist in other places.
Okay.
You would need, I mean, for anything, for any divinity, actually gods are very tied to their planes. It's just kind of how they work.
Mm-hmm.
So for any divinity to be able to cross over or do anything else, they would essentially lose all their power, and they would have to gain it in some other way.
Okay.
Oh, would it be something like how when Orm didn't have his connection to the Feywild, nasty things kept happening to him?
Yeah, exactly like that. Well, not exactly. Orm is not large enough to have it really be a problem. Instead of, how can I put this? It's like, imagine if Orm was a... it's like Orm is like a fish. So being put in different liquids that were sort of watery mostly was okay. It just kind of affected him internally. When you're talking about gods, you're talking about bowls rather than being the fish themselves. So when they walk in, whatever rushes in to fill the void would make them essentially bowls of something else. If something even rushed to fill the void.
Well, the bowl of nothing is still a bowl of something else.
I suppose that's true, but it's definitely very different from a bowl of pudding.
What's that?
A bowl of pudding very quickly becomes a bowl of nothing.
Very true. Another interesting metaphor for divinity.
all the previous times that we would have ran across each other.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your objectives there?
Well, I mostly run into you guys by accident. I'm mm-hmm. not trying to steer you in any direction. It just so happens, I think, that some of the things that you've been involved send up some sort of red flag that requires investigation. This is why I was in Tuberville, because those pods kind of resemble some things that have been used before by other races. It turned out they were not a problem. And then in the Astral Sea, I really just happened to be passing by that temple. I mean, it's a shortcut of sorts. Certain places are easier to travel to and from.
Yeah.
So.
Like the Sky Talkers.
Yeah, exactly. Like Sky Talker Tower would be certain places in the Feywild, the Feydark. It's just places that are naturally, if you will, closer to the surface of the vertex, even though we're talking about not exactly three dimensions.
Makes sense.
I mean, the Winged Triskelion with its reality-altering powers just kind of creates a natural well. Fortunately, you guys did us a favor of destroying it.
In a manner of speaking, yes.
So, Mava, are you here just on a supervisory role, or would you be willing to help us scout when we actually get to the space?
Well, it doesn't do me a lot of good to get killed, so I'm willing to help as far as it's concerned.
Great.
Until I get different orders.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to go off on my own a fair bit, and it would be nice to have backup in case anything went wrong.
Yeah, I can help.
Anything else of note besides this, coil project that's been going on in New Malakal? I've been out of touch.
Tekiotl thinks about it. They keep trying to expand the plates as far as they'll go. There have been all these talks about reclaiming some of the lost ones, but nothing, especially since this went into cycle 9, nothing has really happened there. Because the coil is now searching deeper into their own ranks and trying to see if there are any problematic people in the city, there's been a lot more call for Sunrise to get involved. So they've been moving people in and out of the city.
Yeah, we had a encounter with them going in, actually. There was a, unfortunately for them, coil group that was going to try to take some of them out.
Yeah, they usually do pretty well. They've got a lot of ways in and out of the city. One of the, as I'm sure you guys have noticed, there are a lot of ways in and out of the city. Some of them aren't pleasant, but it's actually not hard to leave New Malakal. It's only socially and economically difficult to leave New Malakal. So Sunrise provides new places to go, in a lot of ways, even new lives, jobs, and things like that. They're really interesting because they really, in some places outside of coil control, they operate out in the open. So they're kind of this this hybrid between truants and a louse guild.
Mm-hmm.
Well, have we walked at least a couple of days yet?
Are we there yet?
Yes, you have walked at least 40 paces outside of your camp.
Oh, boy.
Yay!
Well, on that note, I think we should probably end this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, for downloading and listening to this episode of Critical Hit. And if you have any questions, podcast@majorspoilers.com. And until next time, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.